From Entrepreneur Media, this is Problem Solvers, a show in which entrepreneurs do what entrepreneurs do best, solve unexpected problems in their business.
We were completely wrong.
And I'm just like, it's not selling.
It was like, we have to start from scratch.
I'm Jason Pfeiffer, the editor-in-chief of Entrepreneur Magazine. Tyson Lawrence had a really good 4 years. It started in 2005 when he launched a logistics company that specialized in moving refrigerated goods. And he was really good at it. By 2009, 4 years into that business, he'd reached $5 million in sales.
And, you know, 2008, 2009 wasn't a real great time. So felt really good. Everything I touched turned to gold.
So he figures this is it. He's got the golden touch. His company is on the right path. It is time to double down and really blow this thing out.
And about 2009, I started really trying to spend money and try to hire more people and, you know, get more customers, get more diverse inside that niche. And we didn't go anywhere. We just stayed flat.
It didn't make sense to Tyson. He was doing all the things that growth is supposed to look like. Investing, hiring, his team was growing. I mean, there were literally more people in the building working to make him money. And at the same time, Tyson's company wasn't just flat, it was going down. Profits were getting squeezed. He was in real trouble. Which brings us to today's theme. What happens when you're growing, but you're not growing? How does real growth happen, and what's it supposed to look like? How do you, well, build to build? Tyson had to learn these answers the hard way, and getting on the right path would involve some gut-wrenching decisions and years of very humbling work. And now, Tyson's company is thriving. But to tell you any more right now about how it's thriving and why would be to throw some major spoilers at you. So instead, we're going to take a quick break and then follow Tyson's story and the story of growth from the very beginning. My wife and I recently got a book deal, so yay, exciting. But then the contract came and I needed to print 4 copies of the last page and have us both sign them and then mail it to our agent, and we don't have a printer at home and the nearest mailbox is 4 blocks away. And seriously, this whole thing took a week. I just kept thinking, there has got to be a better way to do this. And there is. SignEasy is an easy-to-use, simple, and legal way to digitally sign documents. You can sign them yourself from anywhere and on any device, or send documents to customers, partners, or colleagues for signing, and even track the progress of documents and get notified when one is signed. Or, let's face it, if you were my agent wondering, where is this contract already? You could have used SignEasy to send me a reminder. Please, 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 let us all agree to stop fussing with documents you have to print and sign and put in a mailbox. SignEasy is faster, easier, and safer. To get started for free, go to getsigneasy.com/podcast. Again, that's getsigneasy.com/podcast. And now onto our second sponsor. I was about to start recording this spot here for our new sponsor, ProsperWorks, but I wanted to know what someone who's used many CRMs thinks, because that's what ProsperWorks makes, a CRM. So I walked over to one of our sales guys, Jim, and I said, Jim, tell me what comes to mind when you hear the words CRM. And Jim sighs, and he says, they are so tedious. And to this, ProsperWorks says, we totally agree. ProsperWorks is a CRM company that knows CRMs are notoriously complicated and inefficient, but its software is the opposite. By integrating with tools you're already using and eliminating repetitive tasks with automation, ProsperWorks makes a beautiful, easy-to-use system that drives productivity to help you and your team sell more faster. Try ProsperWorks today for free using our link prosperworks.com/loveyourcrm. Again, prosperworks.com/loveyourcrm. Okay, let's get back to the story. All right, we're back. So Tyson graduates college in 2000, and everyone he knows is going into tech, but he wants to try something else. He gets a job with a huge third-party logistics provider in the Bay Area and figures he'll work it for a year and then go to law school. But to his surprise, he falls in love with logistics. It's like working a gigantic puzzle, and he really thrives on it. And about 5 years quickly fly by.
You know, I'd been moving and shaking in a couple of different industries, working in the port of Oakland, and I was currently doing refrigerated perishable goods. And it was high risk, high reward, 24/7 on the phone, you know, that type of deal and making deals. And I just can't see myself doing this for the rest of my life for somebody else. And then first got an idea in my head, well, maybe I should go back to law school and I'll just do this on the side. And so that's what I did. I went back to law school and I started my business at the same time.
A logistics business. He builds a company that specializes in what he'd learned at his former employer, which, as I said at the top of the show, was refrigerated perishable goods. So just so that we all understand what that is, if you were a company that had to move like 10,000 cases of tuna salad from Los Angeles to Cleveland, you would hire Tyson's company to first figure out the best mode of transportation, be it truck or train or whatever, and then find the best truck company or train company for the job, and then just make it happen. And Tyson's got this business down. He's running it during the day, and then he's attending law school at night. But quickly, he realizes that this schedule does not make sense. Like, he will be making more money doing logistics than he would as a lawyer. So after a year of school, he drops out.
So I decided to start or really pour into growing that company, you know, beyond just myself. You know, I started bringing people on, teaching them the business, and had a lot of success, grew it real fast.
And as we've already discussed, the next few years were awesome. 2005 to 2009, just growing like crazy. He'd taken on a bunch of clients, including one huge national retailer, and his relationship with that retailer just kept growing to where, like, he was just getting new business from them all the time. Start with foods, move it to flowers, that kind of thing. Just everything. So now we get into the problem you heard at the beginning of the show. Tyson is so energized by these first few years of growth that he starts hiring and investing and building, and his profits are flat, and then they start going down, and it's a total mystery to him. So for the first time, Tyson starts to take a cold, hard look at his business, and it does not take long to see the problem. Can you guess what it is? Here's a tip. Sometimes in business, the thing you think is your greatest asset is actually your greatest weakness. And that could be for any number of reasons, but I would argue that it's because when you think something is your greatest asset, you never look critically at it. You just set it aside. You think, yeah, that thing's running perfect. Just let it be. But the smartest entrepreneurs never let anything just be. They are always looking, always refining. And in Tyson's case, the shock comes when he looks at his relationship with that giant retailer, the one that's been such a source of business for him and also, frankly, is such a source of pride that he's been able to work with a company of that size. And he realizes, oh my God, they are 85% of my business and they know it.
I was having all these negotiations and fights with them, and it was always, you know, the heavy hand. It was a David and Goliath situation to begin with. You know what I mean? We were a small company. We had, you know, 8 people working for us, and they were a multi-million dollar, you know, behemoth. And what they say went, and we had to figure out how to make that happen.
The retailer was making increasing demands of Tyson's company. If there were damaged goods, for example, even if the damage wasn't Tyson's fault, they'd force him to eat the costs. And Tyson couldn't just pass those costs along to, like, the independent trucker who moved the product, because he has to keep good relationships with those people. And the big retailer would also start changing terms on him, like lowering what they were going to pay for jobs or paying him more irregularly and saying he'd need to give up 2% in order to get his payments processed faster. And it's not like Tyson didn't know all this before. He did. But this retailer was the source of so much business that he figured, let's just make it work. It's worth it in the long run. But once he started looking at the numbers, he realized it wasn't really worth it. So now he starts to think, okay, a change has to happen, but how will the dominoes fall? I mean, it's clear, he cannot keep going on like this. But when he pushes back, even just a little, this giant retailer is going to start waving around their contracts and sicking their lawyers on Tyson, and there's just no way he's going to be able to withstand that.
It was basically, if you piss off one part of it, we're going to lose all of it. So I couldn't find a way to really get out of it without just like cutting it off completely, you know, and just saying, okay, we'll take what comes from it, you know, because by now I was thinking, how do I get rid of them? You know what I mean? Do I just stop one day moving freight for them?
Was it, and this must have been terrifying to think about though, because what is your company if not serving this client?
Right, totally, you know, and so I can't even believe I'm having these thoughts, you know, but I'd almost kind of started moving beyond it and was problem solving onto this is our reality. How do we survive? You know, or how do I survive? You know, how do I, you know, I did now have a 2-year-old and I have a 5-year-old and live in the Bay Area, you know, I mean, and I got employees, you know, those are like family members, you know, and so I called up my mentors. I got everybody around that made, you know, their advice, you know, meant anything to me. And we had a powwow in my office and it was a seminal moment. I remember it very vividly. I'm shaking a little bit as we talk about it, but, you know, I basically pitched out 3 options, you know, saying this is how, you know, I see us in our current situation. There were some people that had money invested in the company too. So I had to take their input in and, basically I just said, A, we just bankrupt this thing, you know, and we all walk away holding our asses. And 2, we go to them and say, hey, look, this is what we need. We need all these rate concessions, you know, basically, which wasn't going to happen, you know. Or 3, we just, you know, fight it out with them, start working on something else completely different, you know, and we'll see what happens. And eventually, that's what we decided to do, was just to kind of, you know, fight it out, you know, say no one time, let the process start, you know what I mean? The ship start to fly, and then we would kind of manage it and see what came out of it.
But Tyson knew what would happen. He'd worked with his client long enough. So yeah, they'd try to fight it out because who knows, right? Maybe it would work. Who knows? If an angry bear is charging you in the forest, you don't just stand there and wait to be devoured. You run, even if it's futile. You run because you have to play the odds, no matter what you've got. But Tyson wasn't okay just playing those odds. So he decided to hedge his bets, play some other odds.
I had already decided to start a new company that was not in the produce, in the perishable industry, not in the refrigerated industry, and was more diverse and was working with smaller clients. And that's kind of where I took my top guys, went in a room and I told them what was happening. I said, you guys can have a job. I had about 6 months of runway. And I said, I believe in you 3 and myself. Let's get over there. Let's get back to it. And let's just build it back up.
Which was a wise decision, because less than 90 days after his old company pushed back against that giant retailer, the company was dead. 90 days. Tyson had woken the monster up and the monster moved fast.
In fact, I didn't call myself an entrepreneur until after I got through this situation, because I didn't feel like I had really earned it, because I never really had any adversity. You know, and I feel like part of being an entrepreneur is overcoming adversity, no matter how big and small it is. It's, you know, getting punched in the face and coming back. And I was clearly getting punched in the face. But now it's like, how am I going to come back? Am I going to go work in tech? Am I going to go, you know, go do all these different things that aren't here? Or am I going to say, okay, I may not do this particular business the way I did it, but I will take the experiences from it and make it better service and others.
This was in 2015, and he called his new company Tactic Logistics Group. That wasn't just a message to his clients. Everything about this new company would be tactical, strategic. For those few guys from his old company that moved over to Tactic with him, he kept their salaries the same because he wanted them to know how much he believed in them. He'd only go after small and medium-sized clients now, the kinds that he could grow alongside with. He'd build his business slowly, never getting ahead of himself, never entering into a relationship unless it was completely mutually beneficial, never compromising because some client had a lot of money.
I had always been a patient person, so I wanted to exclude patience on this, you know, and obviously I wanted to get back to, I was, you know, supporting my family and, you know, all that type of stuff. And so I believed in the long game of developing these relationships individually with these customers and then being along for the ride as they grow.
How has it been communicating that to your team? Because I imagine, you know, some people may want to move at a different pace,
right,
especially if they were used to being at the old company that was working, you know, bigger jobs and bringing in more money.
It was, you know, to be honest with you, that was a real struggle because there was a lot of, I think, uncertainty, and people are scared when change happens. And then when it kind of happens on that magnitude, you know, you kind of blow up your company. Yeah, I was getting back to, I always visualize myself walking out of that company, kind of laying the tripwire, you know, when I blew it up. And then I sat back and we built it up differently. But I just had to communicate with them and my vision, and they understood it from the beginning. I think it was refreshing for them to not have to deal with the pressure of working for a bigger company. Oh, shoot, we don't want to make them mad. We don't want to do this. You know, we're walking on eggshells, you know, and we're more in an advisory role now where, you know, our clients were listening to us. They wanted our input. We were able to kind of work together as a collaboration.
That's hard work. Really, that's harder work than just landing that one huge client and attaching yourself to it like a barnacle. And hard work, frankly, is the real core of what it means to grow a business the right way. There are no shortcuts. I mean, if you're sitting back and thinking, hey, this is easy, we're just growing because I have the golden touch, then I assure you, you probably don't have the golden touch and you just haven't figured that out yet. So what does Tyson have to show for this new hard work? Some pretty impressive numbers, actually. He has about 40 clients, the most well-known of which is Hintwater. He's entering his third year in this new business and is just about to make $5 million in revenue. And that's a magic number for him because it's exactly what he made at the height of his last company before it flatlined. And while he was making $5 million with 10 employees at that old company, he's now making $5 million with 5 employees at the new company. And the way his company is growing, he expects it to hit $15 to $20 million in revenue by the year 2020. You know, when you look back on Tyson's story, you can put it in pretty simple terms. Why didn't his old company grow? Because it literally wasn't built to grow. He didn't know that at the time, but he does now. I mean, this is going to sound a little stupid, but it's worth saying, you can't grow a company that's not built to grow any more than you can water a fence and expect it to grow like a tree. The first step to growth is to build a company that's truly built to grow. And then you do what you were built to do. And that's our show. Problem Solvers comes out every week, so to make sure that you don't miss an episode, please subscribe on iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. If you love what we're doing, please also leave us a review. It totally helps us reach more people. That's our problem solving right here. And of course, there are a lot more stories like this one, along with practical advice on how to start and grow a business in Entrepreneur Magazine and on our website, entrepreneur.com. Problem Solvers is a production of Entrepreneur Media. Our producer is Nathan Latka. Again, my name is Jason Pfeiffer, and I'm the editor-in-chief of Entrepreneur Magazine. Let me know what you think about the show. You can find me on Twitter at HeyPfeiffer, H-E-Y-F-E-I-F-E-R. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next week.